Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Nancy D. Adler with GamblingOnLife.com, your life trending coach, and I am betting on you. It is 10 a.m. on the 28th of March. We are broadcasting live just outside of Phoenix, Arizona, and I have a very special guest joining us today. His name is Bill D., and so I'm seeing that he is trying to call in, and I'm unable to get him on the line. Let me see if I can do so. Phil, are you with us?
I'm here, Nancy. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you very much. It is an honor and privilege, everyone, to introduce my brother in the recovery program and also my friend online. Let me see if I can stop that music, Phil, and we'll go ahead and get started.
Thank you. I'm in post-fog, if that's the problem. I don't know if that, that's
Thanks
the issue.
Very much for your patience, everyone. As I said, I am absolutely honored to introduce my brother in recovery and also my online friend, Phil B. Phil began his online recovery experience in February 1993. Congratulations, Phil. On the
Thank
Prodigy
you.
Network. And after being exposed to online recovery, it all changed for Phil. So throughout the years, his experience include creating a recovery group on WorldNet. Would love to talk more about that before the break of the Internet. So Phil is truly a pioneer. And I think from there, Phil, no one can share your story better than yourself. So welcome to Gambling on Life radio show. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, Nancy. And first of all, I want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this. For those that are listening out there, my name is Phil B. I'm from the Central Mass area. I've been doing internet radio, as Nancy said, since 1993. Not internet radio, but internet recovery since 1993. It changed my life. I'll go back to the beginning and go from there. Getting my first computer, I had never touched a computer in my life. I bought it for my daughter, turned it on, got the modem working. It came with a Prodigy disc. I found others in recovery online, and my life was changed. I no longer was stuck, and I hate to use the word stuck, but I was no longer in a narrow corridor of just the people in my area. I learned so much. What happens is, let me tell you, this was before the internet even broke. Back then, if you joined Prodigy or you joined CompuServe or you joined AOL, it was like you were in their lake. You couldn't talk amongst each other. So the people that I was building a network with were only on the Prodigy network. It wasn't until possibly late 94 that the internet began to make its public debut. And I heard about a recovery meeting online on AOL. I actually was given one of the old AOL discs. It used to come on a floppy disk. They'd give you 10 hours a month. A whole 10 hours, what we could do with that. But I was on there playing around, and someone told me about a world meeting online on something called IRC. Being a good person and an addict in recovery, I don't know how to get rid of that. Okay. Being a good addict in recovery, I became obsessed with finding this meeting. And I ended up buying another computer and finding IRC and going out there and learning that there wasn't such a meeting. So I did what anyone does when they want something bad enough. I went on and I searched for people in recovery online, and it was hard to do back then because there weren't as many people in recovery online as there are today. And we did build a meeting, and we would meet every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It was called Pound 12-Step, because in IRC everything begins with a pound. And that meeting was fabulous because there were people coming in from all over the world. And I still have people I talk to today that I met back then. And then came the point where I actually decided to start an email support group. Again, can't be picky as to who you want to have, because it really wasn't the case of I could say, okay, I want the people in GA only, or I want the people in AA only or NA only, because there was just not that much to choose from. So I made a recovery support group called Recovery Email. And that went on from May of 95 until December of 97, when I chose to break away from that group and begin a NA online group called justfortoday.org. It's still going. It's an email support group. That is still going. Moving forward, about a year ago, I was at a meeting, and someone brought up the fact that there was someone looking to host a recovery podcast. And they were paying $100 a show. Now, I know a little bit about podcasting and the fact that there really is no money to be made at it. But all my eyes were hearing were, or my ears were hearing were, $100 a show. So I contacted the gentleman, and sure enough, it was a case of he would ask you to find somebody to support the group or sponsor your podcast, and he would get the money and then give you the $100 and the bottom line was it folded. So I did a little checking into it, and I found that it's very easy to do a podcast. All you need to do is get a microphone and people to talk with. And I went forward. I bought a microphone, and I started doing my own podcasts, which are online now at tinyurl.com/carrythemessage. You can go there. I actually had the privilege of speaking with Nancy on one of those podcasts, so you can hear it there. And it's just fantastic as to the online recovery. Now, getting into recovery itself, Nancy, any questions as far as I'm going at this point?
Well, you know, I'm just enjoying listening to your experience online, and thank you for doing whatever it took to keep going online. I know there's, like as I said, you are truly a pioneer. And so your website is justfortoday.org?
That being the number four, correct. That is for the email group, yes, justfortoday.org. As far as the podcast site, you can find that, the easiest way to find that is tinyurl.com/carrythemessage. That'll take you right to the podcast site. I'm also, at this point, even as we speak right now doing this, playing around with doing some live TV on Ustream. And you can find that at, again, tinyurl.com/philb-live. And I love the things that the Internet is providing us, ways to reach out for recovery, ways to find people. It's just amazing. It really is. And, you know, one of the things they talk about in the program is the how of the program, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. One of the first people I had to learn to be honest with was myself, then becoming open-minded to the fact that, gee, I don't know everything. And then the willingness to move forward with things I don't know, that walking through the fear that the fear of the unknown, and it's allowed me to do things that like I'm doing now. It allows me to move forward, to reach out. Another great website for those of you out there, because I believe I met Nancy through this site, is intherooms.com. I'm thinking that possibly today or tomorrow I'll be hitting 10,000 people in my network on intherooms.com. And it is a way to reach out, to be, not only reach out, but to have others being able to reach out to you. Daily, I speak with people that are new, people that have been around for a while, people from all fellowships. I do not, just because I'm a recovering addict, I do not limit myself to just speaking with other recovering addicts. I'd like to talk a little about that when I first got here, too. They told us when we got here that we need to stick with the winners. And when you're new, who's the winners? You don't know. And I remember going to meetings and seeing the same guys at this meeting. And if somebody mentioned something from another fellowship, they would speak sternly with them after the meeting and say all sorts of stuff. And there are terms for people like that, and I was one of them. I was a guy who had what we call in the NA fellowship, and I'm sure the other fellowships have it, an NA Nazi, you know? And it wasn't until I got online and I was exposed to other people in recovery and I realized that this is not one fellowship against another. This is all of us on the same journey. This is all of us dealing with whatever it is that caused the problem. Again, this being a Gamblers Anonymous, I'll talk about that and the fact that it's the same thing. It's the same, you're dealing with the addiction. It's an addiction, and how we act out on that addiction is one thing. Stopping that addiction, that acting out, is another, but then it's then the steps come into play. Those steps are where we learn to about ourselves and how to deal with life and how to have a life. And then comes balance. One of the hardest things to maintain in recovery is a balance. I know when I first started coming around, my balance went from being an active drug addict to being an active meeting addict. Oh, I had to be at a meeting. I had to be around people in recovery. I had to do this. I had to do that. Today, I balance my life. I have a full-time life. But yes, I have a full-time job. I have a wife. I have a family, and I'm in recovery. And finding a balance to be able to do all that is difficult, but it can be done. It can be done. The hours that I work are strange. I can't get to evening meetings, but that's okay because I find other ways to keep in touch with people in recovery, as I spoke of in the rooms, doing the podcast, doing things such as this. Yes, I still hit meetings. I just don't do a meeting every day because I have that balance in my life. I still have a sponsor. I still sponsor people. I still believe that if you want to change in recovery, it is done through the steps.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just wanted to touch what you said about balance. I think even people that, you know, are not in a recovery program, just we as human beings work on balance in life.
That's the key in the fact that, you know, a lot of people when they get into recovery forget the fact that not only are we in recovery, we're still a human. And it is an effect that you need to put out there. But being in recovery, we have tools that those other, as we like to call them, earth people don't have. So we kind of one up on them because we can deal with things a little differently. You know, that's one of the great things about recovery, about the fact that when you do take that first step and you do decide that you really want to do this and you want to change your life, that when the changes come, you can become part of life outside of the rooms. You know, out there in the real life, you can take what you learn. And I'm not talking about hitting slogans to everybody on the street or pounding on the books and telling them what you learn. Just taking what you learn and going out there into life and living it. And I found that, you know, when I was not in recovery, I was an isolator in the fact that I wanted nothing to do with anybody unless they had something for me. And today, I have no problem going out there in life and being part of it. And I constantly hear people saying to me at work, you know, there's one place, is, why do you always smile? What is going on? And I don't realize I'm doing it. I notice it's part of my life. It's part of how it is. You know, it's one of the gifts of being in recovery is that I can enjoy just the simple things in life. I don't need that constant stimulation. You know, I'm enjoying my life today.
So you find it frightens people sometimes when you're so darn happy?
Yes. Yes. It's like they think you know something that they don't know. Well, maybe I do, and the fact that one of the things we talk about in the fellowship is that, you know, there's a difference between religion and spirituality. Religion is for those people that are afraid to go to hell. Spirituality is for those of us that have been there. And,
well, there's a way back, right?
Well, I've been there, and I felt hopeless, and I felt worthless, and I felt no self-esteem. And today I have all those tools, thanks to recovery. And it gives me that smile on my face. And it's not a case of I don't walk around smiling because, oh, geez, I didn't think about this. No, I'm smiling because, you know what, my life is good today. I'm having the life that I can't even say this is the life I dreamed of, because I never dared to dream about things like this. This wasn't possible. And it's not like I'm doing amazing things, traveling around the world and changing the world. It's the fact that I'm comfortable in my own skin, and that was something that I never believed would happen.
I think it relates to what you said a little bit earlier, Phil, about, you know, whatever the addiction, it's the internal work that we do through the steps. And for me, the spirituality piece was huge. And I always knew that my higher power that I choose to call God, you know, forgave me for what I had done in, you know, when I was actively gambling, long before I forgave myself. But it was my faith that I held on to. You spoke about fear of the unknown and to just learn to trust myself again and you know, trust in my God. And that's what carried me through.
That was an issue that I had a lot of difficulty with, talking about step three, as far as, you know, looking at turning your will and your life over to the care of God as we understand Him. I tried skipping that step. It doesn't work. You can't skip the steps. You're there in order for a reason. It's funny. I was a secretary of a group that was a 1-2-3 meeting. And I would be there 2 out of 3 weeks, but when it was step three, I'd go to another meeting because I just didn't want to talk about it, because I was doing what a lot of people that are new do when they get here, and that is the fact that I wasn't looking as to what the step was. I was looking up to what I believed it said. And what I thought it said was, we got to turn our will and our life over, and there's nothing else we can do about it. But it doesn't say that. Since we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of the God as we understand them. That last part for me was the clicker. As we understand it, I don't have to have yours. I can find my own. And finding it was the key. Once you find a God of your understanding or a higher power and it works for you, you're able to move on to step four. Take that inventory. Become honest with yourself. Really look at your past. I'm not saying that we need to beat ourselves up over our past, but looking at it, looking at where we are. Then finding someone. I was speaking with a gentleman last night about step four. It suggests you do with a sponsor, but you know what? I was talking to him about a gentleman that I know that did his fourth step, and you know, he shared it with his mother because he had an ultimate trust with his mother. And that is okay, as long as you trust the person that you're doing it with. That's okay. His mother's not in recovery. But the fact that he was able to do a fifth step, let it go, see his patterns, that's the key to step four. See your patterns in life, and then move on, where once you see the patterns, then you're able to actually know the defects and begin to know the defects. I often say that when I first got here, I had 3 defects. I now probably have 50. They're the same ones I had when I got here. I just didn't know how to identify them. And we learned that in recovery. And moving on to step 6 and 7, where you know, you ask to have them removed. They're never removed. I don't ask to have my defects removed. I asked for awareness of them and the ability to not act out on these defects because I'm aware of them. You know, and that's what the steps are all about, is the fact of making us aware of our past. We no longer have to beat out. You know, they tell us we're only as sick as our secrets. If you do a thorough fourth step and you do a fifth step, then you no longer have that secret. You shared it with someone else. You don't need to take that to an open meeting and share it with everybody. But as long as you share it with another human being and the God of your understanding, it doesn't own you. And that is such a freedom. It really is.
That is so true. It takes a lot of pressure off, if you will. You know, I've heard that same expression many times, we're only as sick as our secrets. But just, I think what you said about, you know, it's very important that you have a sponsor or someone, a close friend that you can trust.
Well, I think it's important in recovery to have a sponsor, you know, and I also believe that it's important to have a sponsor that has a sponsor that has a sponsor, because that is where the recovery process is. But as far as, you know, this gentleman that did it with his mother, well, he found somebody he could trust to do it with and that he knew wasn't going to run with it. You know, I also shared with the gentleman last night that I was talking with, that I remember the first time someone did a fifth step with me. And I knew this gentleman for 30 years. And some of the things he was telling me, I felt at the time, it was like, wow, he's giving me the power. I could own this guy with the stuff I know about him. Now, that was 10 years ago. I've never shared what he has told me with another soul. So it was a growing experience, not only for him to let it go, but for myself. And the fact that I could take someone else's trust and be good with it. Wow, it was growing. It really was. It's a growing thing to realize that I could be trusted today, because I couldn't trust myself.
I still get that. I still get that. That was the process for me. You know, I think trust, as in charity, begins at home.
Mm-hmm. Trust in yourself is where it all starts. It's the same thing when, you know, you have to learn for myself. When I got here, I did not like myself. I remember working, and I would take, you know, I do a lot of driving as part of my job, and taking the rearview mirror and pushing it up so I wouldn't have to look myself in the eye when I was driving. One of the arts of was being able to shave without looking myself in the eye when I was shaving, because I didn't like the person in the mirror. I hated the person in the mirror. I wish I was somebody else. And today, I have no issues with myself. You know, I don't consider myself a conceited person that loves myself and is walking around kissing myself. But I'm comfortable being who I am today. I don't need to be who I think you want me to be. And that is freedom.
Yes, it is. Congratulations on that. Just, you said it best earlier, I think, you know, just being comfortable in our own skin, doing the work so we can look ourselves in the mirror and say, you know what, you're just absolutely all right with me. And I don't think it's arrogant or egotistical. It is just, you know, confidence and being authentic with ourselves so we can be authentic with others.
It's a freedom. It's the freedom of recovery. Everything, you move forward. You know, I was having lunch the other day with somebody that's been coming around for 7 or 8 years and never taking this serious. And he's made the choice that he's going to take this serious. And he asked for a suggestion. And the suggestion that I gave him was that, you know, this was last week when he called me. I said, we need to go to a meeting. You need to get up as close to the front as you can. You need to raise your hand, and you need to tell everybody in the meeting where you are. And when we were having lunch, he said, the most amazing thing happened. He says, I did what you did. You suggested I do. I raised my hand, and I told people what's going on with me. And after the meeting, they talked to me. And they gave me phone numbers, and three people even called me when I got home. He said, I don't believe it. They really care. Why do they do this? I said, you know why we do this? So that when you come around for a while, and you've been here for a while, and you see somebody who's in the condition you're in right now, just coming in the door, raising their hand, saying, how can I get help? You're there for them. Pay it forward. That's what it's about. Pay forward what we get. You know, we only keep this by giving it away.
Absolutely. So thank you for giving it away today, Phil.
It's been a pleasure being here and being able to be on your show. And Nancy, I wish you the best of luck as far as this radio thing you got. You know, it's great to see someone else moving along in this, I don't want to say industry, because that makes those that don't understand it think that we're doing this for financial reasons, and we're not. The only reason we do this is to carry the message to pay it forward, because we never know who we're going to help.
That's right. You know, and that rings true in meetings and just, you know, in life in general, we never know what little thing we may say or do that will help another.
Correct. Correct. You know, there are no coincidences. Everything happens for a reason. It's all, I like to say, this is all part of the higher power's plan. And it's not my place to know the plan. It's just my place to be part of it.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you're part. I'm glad we connected on in the rooms, and I would, you know, encourage everyone to go there. It's a wonderful fellowship, and I've met so many wonderful people that have, you know, real strength in recovery, and it, you know, it's just another big family. Phil, would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, like I say, I have a network now that's over 9,000 growing, and the reason is because I reach out daily. I go out there and I reach out, and you know, I'm able to access in the rooms from my phone. So during the day, I go back in, and I usually have messages from people, and I answer them. You know, I put my phone number out there for people to contact me if they care to call. Because that's how it is. It gives me the ability to go not only local, because we do that at meetings, but to go worldwide and to not only share my message of hope, but to hear other messages of hope. Because, you know, if we all share honestly as to how this recovery process is working, we can pick up little bits and pieces to use on our own. And this is a great process.
You know, I believe that in the giving is the receiving.
Correct. We keep it by giving it away. Unless we give it away, we can't move forward. I know that a lot, you hear people that, you know, go out and come back at meetings saying the first thing that they usually say is, you know, I stopped being part of the process. I knew everything. I didn't need to keep doing this. And is the day that I know everything is the day I'm in trouble. You know, I constantly say I have so much room for growth, so much room for growth. And I'm coming up on an anniversary Wednesday, 17 years I've been coming around. No need to, no slip, trip, or fall. Not that that can't happen, but I try to keep this in the day. And I am grateful, you know, somebody to have 17 years of continuous recovery when I was told at my first meeting, I was suggested that I do 90 meetings in 90 days, and I left. I said, I don't know if I'll be back tomorrow. And here I am, still coming.
Congratulations.
Day at a time. That's the secret.
Wow. And, you know, some days, Phil, it's you know, breaking it down even less than that. Sometimes, you know, we can start our day over more than once.
Oh, sometimes you have to. Now, I had an incident yesterday that this was a prime example. I was in the process of doing my job, and I had to go into an office, an attorney's office, and the name on the package that I was delivering wasn't on the window, and I was unfamiliar with it. And when I walked into the office, there was an attorney talking on the phone. So I stood there. I didn't bother him. I understood. Someone did finally come up to me, and I asked them, you know, is this person in the office? And they said, yes. And I said, well, can you please sign for it? And the gentleman that was on the phone looked at us and said, can you two shut up? I'm trying to talk. immediately, my first response was to, you know, let him know what where he needed to go. But you know what? Two wrongs don't make a right. So I bit my tongue. I didn't say anything. I got my signature, and I left the place. And I thought, geez, that poor guy could really use a meeting. You know, it's all about him today, isn't it?
Well, it's just my personal opinion, you know, a public service announcement that most of us could probably use a very strong 12-step program.
That's, again, going back to, we're gifted. We have these tools. You know, I mean, people that don't understand the recovery process, and I know this from my own experience, look at it like those poor people have to go to meetings the rest of their lives. That's exactly how I looked at it. And it's not a case of we have to go to meetings the rest of our lives. It's that we have a life now because of these meetings, you know. That's one of the things that I tell the newcomers when they come. You know, not only do you need to go to the meeting, but you need to get involved. You need to do what has to be done, and you need to get a sponsor, and you need to get these steps in your life. You know, it, just because you're new doesn't mean you can't start with it with a sponsor. You know, that you've already basically taken the first step without knowing it because you're here, because you're powerless. Obviously, your life is unmanageable. If it wasn't, you'd be saying those poor people that have to go to meetings the rest of their life. You know, that's what it's about.
And, you know, the recovery process is just that. It's a process. And being a bit of a perfectionist myself, I look every now and then at, you know, just being and living life to the fullest. And it is a process, and it's a process of growth. You mentioned growth earlier. So I am grateful every single day that, you know, that I'm on the path and that I've connected with brothers and sisters like yourself, Phil. What would you say is your largest tool? You had spoken earlier about your toolbox.
I believe that for myself, it's having a network. Having a network, you know, I'm blessed with the fact that I work in the city that not only was I active in, but has been part of my recovery. And I work... My job takes me to the streets, and daily I run into four or five people in the program that I'm able to see. Not only do I do this online, I actually do it face-to-face. For those of you that don't believe it, that actually can be done still, as again. I take all the process, and I think reaching out is one of the biggest tools, being able to reach out, you know, and not feel better than, just feeling equal. You know, just because I have some time under my belt makes me no better than the guy with the one day just coming in the door. We're equal. You know, what time did you get up? You get up at 4 o'clock, I get up at 5. You've got more time than me because this is all we got is today. This is the gift.
Amen. And how much have you learned, you know, I know my experience has been that, you know, I learned so much from the newcomers.
We need to have them, you know, not only do they help the fellowships grow, but they keep us in the fact that they remind us. They don't realize that we need them as much as they need us. They remind us of what it was like, you know, that rawness. Because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, having a car accident and being in the hospital, laid up in the hospital for weeks at a time. You know that pain at the time. But 3 years down the road, all you remember was being in the hospital. You don't know the pain. Whereas when you go to a meeting and you see someone coming in with one day, that shakiness and that they're not sure that this is going to work and their life is falling apart and they don't realize that they're going on the journey of their life, that is the pain that we need to not only see but remember. And we have the gifts of the tools that we're able to give to them if they're willing to stick and stay. And get what we have, because we keep it by giving away.
What did it for you, Phil? How was your pain when you finally made that decision?
You know, I my bottom, believe it or not, I hit my bottom 12 years before I ever made the call to go into recovery.
Wow.
I continued existing in life. I got myself a nice job, I got married, I had a child, all doing what I was doing. But, you know, a day came, I set a date that I was going to stop. And I said, come that day, that's going to be it. I'm all done. I'm done with this lifestyle. And the day came and I couldn't. And so I just kind of shook it off and said, oh, well. But, you know, in the back of my head now, it was planted. I couldn't stop. I always thought I could, but I couldn't. And it was about 4 months later that I just woke up one morning and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I need to do something about this. And when I was working, I got to a payphone and I called 6 different treatment centers and I talked 6 different treatment centers into not taking me.
How'd that work for you?
Well, the reason is because, you know, part of the disease for me was lying, cheating, stealing, and manipulating. So it was kind of like the cartoons where you would have, you know, the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. The angel was dying the phone numbers and the devil was talking to the people. And it didn't work. So I made one final phone call to somebody. And I said, can you please come out and meet me? I need to ask you something. And the person pulled up and I got in the car and I said, as you know, I'm not pulling any punches. I have a serious problem and I need help. And I need you to make some phone calls. And this evening I need to have a phone number or something to help me. Because tomorrow I'm not going to want this. And I get out of the car and I walked away. And that evening I got a phone number that I dialed. And I agreed to go into outpatient treatment, and it was the beginning. It wasn't what cured me, not that I'm cured. It was the beginning, because in that outpatient treatment, they told me I needed to do 3 things. 1, I needed to come to every one of their sessions. 2, I couldn't use any substance within 72 hours of their session. And 3, I needed to go to 2 meetings a week. Now, for myself, I walked out of there thinking, well, they didn't say I had to stop. They just said I couldn't do it within 72 hours. It wasn't until I was halfway home that I realized I went Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and there wasn't 72 hours between any of those days. So I kind of fell into that loophole, but that's all right. I was going to do it. But the meeting part, I'll try that. So a couple days later, I hit my first meeting. And I ended up dropping out of that outpatient treatment because I was getting more from the meetings than I was getting from that treatment. Because I found that other people weren't doing what was suggested when they first walked in. They weren't coming to every session. They were still using and being allowed to come back. And I said, you know, this is to them. This is only about them getting their copayment and the insurance money. But what do they want from me at the meetings? They just want to see me show up. They just want to give me what they have. They're not asking for anything. So I was kind enough to drop the outpatient treatment. And when I did make a year, I contacted that counselor, and he was nice enough to come to my 1-year anniversary and seem to get my coin.
You know, I could not have done it without my counselors and today my coaches and mentors. I'm blessed to be a coach. But I always knew that they couldn't do it for me, Phil, but I didn't have to do it alone.
And correct. We're not alone anymore because for so many years we were, you know? And you know, yourself, I'm sure that, you know, what were you looking for when you were gambling? That instant gratification, that thrill, you know, I hit, you know? And it's the same thing for a drug addict and an alcoholic. I know that, you know, I was at an AA meeting one time, and that's when it really struck home to me. I heard a gentleman sharing about the fact that, you know, the moment came where they say, okay, last call, everybody out. And he left, and he was pounding on the back door. He just needed to have one more drink. He just needed to have that one more drink. He just had to have it. And he's pounding at the door probably for about 45 minutes to an hour. And then he heard the lock slip. The bartender was giving up and opening the door, and he felt good. And he realized, I don't even have the substance in my body, but I'm going to get it, and I feel good. And that rang home to me. How many times did I, you know, make the phone call and ask the guy, hey, you got anything? And he'd say, yeah, come on over. And I'm already feeling good. I haven't put the substance in my body. I know it's coming. Therefore, I have this disease. It's not about the substance. It's about the feelings. You know, and that's what we run from. We run from feelings, and that's one of the things that the steps help us deal with. help us to identify feelings, help us to be able to communicate with people about our feelings, because we never did that. You ran from that. That's the reason why gamblers gamble, alcoholics drink, and drug addicts take drugs. We don't want to deal with feelings.
You're right. It's not about the substance or how we run from our feelings. I lost 13 years of my life to gambling. I don't consider it a loss today. In fact, it was, you know, a gift to allow me to get to where I am today. But what I found when I was gambling was I had no interest in having relationships with people or to really participate in life. And what I learned through my recovery is not only was I running from life, I was running from myself. I had no idea who I was.
Isn't it great to know yourself today?
Yes. Yes. And I am grateful to be
here. The process continues. That's the great thing. It doesn't end. We get to know ourselves and we get to keep moving forward.
Absolutely. Phil, we've got a few more minutes. Time has flown by. I've so enjoyed our discussion. Anything else you'd like to share quickly before we close?
If you're listening to this and you have a problem, whether it be drugs, alcohol, gambling, codependence, there is help out there. There is. Pick up your local phone book. You'll find numbers in there. We have helplines. All these fellowships have helplines. Don't be afraid. Make the phone call. You're going to find you're not alone, that your life can change, that as bad as you think it is, it can get better. And if you allow it to and you take the suggestions of those people that have walked the path before you, you'll find that it will get better. There is hope today. None of us are hopeless. I often say to people, take your right hand, put it on your left hand wrist. If you feel a pulse, you have a chance. You want it. And if you want it, it's available. Please, help yourself today. Make that phone call. Jump on the internet. Go to In the Rooms. Go where you have to go. Let people know you need help. They'll give you suggestions on what you need to do. Follow the suggestions. They may sound corny. They may sound geeky. You may not want. You may look at it like this isn't going to work. As I did when I was suggested at my first meeting, do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I just shook my head. I wasn't sure if I was coming back tomorrow. But you know what? Something brought me back, and I'm still coming. And there is hope for those of you out there that are suffering today. You can do this. If I can do this, if Nancy can do this, anybody can do this.
We're better together, Phil. Thank you so much for sharing the message and continuing to share the message. And congratulations on your anniversary/birthday that's coming up next week in 17 years. That's incredible, one day at a time. I often close this broadcast by quoting Bill W. with Alcoholics Anonymous by saying, God loves you, and so do I. So keep coming back. It's my turn to give back. You can send me an email and reach out to me. I'm happy to help. My email is nancy@gamblingonlife.com. And I will see you later today on a broadcast. I'll be interviewing Marilyn Lancelot. She is an author and sister of mine in the program and dear friend, Marilyn Lancelot, author of Gripped by Gambling. That will be later today. I'm happy to send out an announcement. And until then, I love you. Keep coming back. It's my turn to give back. Bye for now.
Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Phil. Bye now.
Bye-bye.